court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Welcome to Court Appointed, two dudes' perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, I'm sitting here soaking wet, just coming from soccer practice today, Tommy.
I know. Stay on your side of the table. Don't come over here and gob me all up.
I got a pretty good glisten going at soccer practice earlier.
Well, that's the way you young fellers are out there running around. I was just sitting there waiting for you, watching TV and eating noodles.
I usually don't play, but we had a full field scrimmage since I'm coaching, and we need an extra player to even it out. So
you loved it.
I got to get out there and run around with the high school kids.
Teach them young boys how it's done, huh?
I'll show these young whippersnappers.
That's right. Till you blow out a knee, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I called for a sub.
Yeah, I guess so.
There was no sub. There was
they
no
brought
subs.
It from Subway.
That was you eating your noodles.
a Subway noodle sandwich. What will they think of next?
Well, we've had a lot of requests for this subject. I think it's been brought up two or three times on the Facebook page. So we figure it was time to get around to it. And we are going to talk about the movie Entrapment with Sean Connery and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Huh, I never heard of that movie.
Yeah, it's the one where she like has yoga pants on, she bends through the lasers.
Oh, how could you forget Catherine Zeta-Jones in yoga pants? Huh?
That's pretty much the only thing I remember about that movie.
Oh.
I don't even know that I saw it. I just saw the previews, and that was the only thing that I remember about it.
Okay, well, I'll take your word for it. I don't think I saw it either.
Well, actually, we're really not talking about the movie.
Good, because I was not the least bit prepared to review this movie.
That's not what you thought we meant whenever we said Entrapment.
Mm-hmm. No, that was not what I thought. The immediate thing that comes to my mind is Chris, what's his name, from the news station that they do the Catch a Predator.
Oh, well, there's a few things you need to know. First of all,
that's what I think about.
I'm Chris Hansen.
Chris Hansen. I was going to say Chris Harrison. That's the wrong show. I knew that wasn't right, but I couldn't think of what the right one was.
He's on Survivor, isn't he?
Yeah. No, Bachelor.
The Bachelor?
Yeah.
That's kind of like The Survivor, but with
that's Probst.
Pretty people.
That's Jeff Probst, I think.
Yeah, Jeff Probst.
Yeah. He had a talk show. I don't think it lasted very long.
It didn't survive?
No, it didn't survive. He doesn't strike me as the type that can sit around in a room full of women and make an interesting show.
Who, Jeff Probst?
Yeah.
No.
Not when you look at his persona on Survivor. That doesn't seem like something that would mesh, you know. I mean, think about him sitting there talking with ladies on The View. Do you see that lasting a long time?
He wears a lot of denim, doesn't he?
No, it's like khaki. Doesn't he wear like safari clothes?
That's true. There was some other show I think he was on where he was like the host. It was like Top Gun or something like that. And he wore a lot of denim on that show. He seemed like a kind of like a cowboy kind of guy.
I guess. I don't know. I don't know him that well. I don't know what he wears.
I haven't talked to him in a while.
I would think when he's on these island with all these people like castaways, he'd be like dressed like SpongeBob.
Or Indiana Jones.
Well, Indiana Jones. He is kind of dressed like a short pant Indiana Jones.
A short pant Indiana Jones?
Yeah.
So this episode is on entrapment, which is a legal defense to a criminal action. And this basically entrapment is where a law enforcement agent or someone working for the law enforcement induces a person to commit a criminal offense that the person would have otherwise been unlikely to commit. It's basically that the idea of it came from the police offense by an officer and his procurement of its commission by one who would have not perpetrated it except for the trickery, persuasion, or fraud of the officer. How's that for a definition?
Man, that's too much to think about. I just say, man, the copper made me do it.
The copper made me do it?
Yeah. Yeah, see, the copper. She'll never take me alive, copper. See?
I don't think anybody's called anybody a copper since the Roaring Twenties.
Well, that was when I was roaring, was the 20s.
I don't think so. I know how old you are, and I don't think you were roaring in the 20s.
Yeah, see, we're going to rub you out, see?
Bugsy Tom.
Bugsy.
Well, it's funny because the actual, it first came to be recognized as a defense by the Supreme Court in a case, Sorrells v. U.S., and that was in 1932.
Yeah.
So that's kind of right in the wheelhouse there of your accent.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah,
coppers
she?
Tricked me.
Yeah.
My name's Sorrells. See?
Yeah, she. You dirty coppers, you'll never take me alive.
Well, the Sorrells case is kind of interesting, and it took place in 1930.
For the podcast's sake, I hope it's very interesting.
There was a prohibition agent in North Carolina, by the name of Martin, and he heard from informers that this guy named Sorrells, who was a factory worker in Canton, had a reputation as a rum runner. Mm-hmm. And so basically, he set up a visit to Sorrells at his house on July 13th and was accompanied by three acquaintances of Sorrells. So this prohibition agent gets a couple of Sorrells buddies and says, let's go over and see old Sorrells. I hear he's a rum runner.
We're going to run some rum.
So he had them introduce him to Sorrells, and he said basically he wanted them to say that he was a fellow veteran of the U.S. Army 30th Infantry Division, and he had served in World War I, and he was just passing through the area. So yeah. He was pretending to be a fellow soldier with this guy who kind
buttering of, him up.
Yeah. Which maybe that's even like a stolen valor type thing. I don't know. Well, anyway, several times during his visit with him, and they were there for about an hour and a half talking about the good old days back in the Great War. The agent asked Sorrells if he could possibly get him some liquor. That he had a powerful thirst come upon him.
Sounds like a Jimmy Buffett line.
I kind of paraphrased a little bit. And so he kept asking him over and over and over again, you know, can you give me some liquor? I need something.
Gots to have my drinks.
Yeah.
I gots to have my drinks.
It's for my nerves. I got the
shakes.
Yeah, I got the shakes.
Getting the heebie-jeebies.
So Sorrells, he told him several times. He's like, no, I don't have anything. I can't get anything for you. I'm sorry. But later, after being like harassed by this guy, he went and got him a half-gallon bottle of whiskey for $5. He, like, left his house, went and got it from somebody for $5. As soon as he came back with it, Martin arrested him right there on the spot for violating the National Prohibition Act.
It's a wonder they just didn't shoot him.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So the lower court did not allow the entrapment of defense, but Sorrells appealed it, and it went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they overturned it and said, you can't do this. This guy was just sitting in his house, hanging out.
You badgered him into it.
You came over there, you badgered him into it, and he went somewhere and got it for you, just like you'd ask him to about five or six times, and so he did it.
And he wasn't even running rum.
No.
He probably had to go over to a neighbor that he knew had some and said, look, I got to get rid of this guy. He's bugging the hell out of me. Here's $5, and all I got is half a bottle. I already done drank half of it. Well, let me have the other half. Maybe he'll take it and leave.
Yeah. So just get this guy out of my house. So that is the genesis of the entrapment defense in the Supreme Court of the U.S.
Mm-hmm. So the basically it said that people, if they were, that this guy would have been minding his own business, watching the Wheel of Fortune or whatever, nothing would have happened until this guy came along and badgered him into buying him whiskey.
Yeah, but it was 1932, so he's probably listening to Wheel of Fortune.
Well, that's
so
true.
He could hear the wheel spinning like click, 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 click. Oh, bankruptcy.
Oh, no. I wanted to buy a vowel.
Do they have vowels back then?
No, I don't think they'd been invented yet.
Back in my day, a vowel only cost 10 cents. You could go to the movies and buy a vowel for 10 cents and have enough for popcorn.
That's right. Didn't get gas on the way home.
I like badgering people from the 1930s. Because I know they're probably not listening to this podcast.
No, probably not.
It's safe.
I don't know. My dad was born in 33.
Yeah, it's true.
He's still alive and kicking.
Sorry, Mr. Schmerl, if you're listening to this podcast.
I don't think he was running rum in 33, though.
Probably not. I don't picture your dad as
he
much.
He was sucking thumb in 33.
I don't picture your dad as being much of a scofflaw. I see he's kind of like a rule-abiding.
Oh, no. Citizen. He ran with the bad crowd.
Did he really?
Yeah, he'll tell you that everybody that he grew up with is either dead or in jail.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. My dad, he ran with a rough crowd. He very few people made it out of the area he grew up in.
Where was he from?
He was in downtown Birmingham, Alabama.
Now, I know he played professional baseball, right?
He was with a minor league club for a short time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my only thing I know about Mr. Schmerl and his sordid past.
And that he's very stingy with his root beer.
He's very stingy with his root beer, and he used to play minor league baseball.
Well, while this has nothing at all to do with the subject, I did blow his mind one time. I was telling him about, because you know how old people are about the internet.
Yeah.
And I was telling him about, you can find stuff about anybody on the internet. And he said, "Won't find me on there. Won't have me on the internet. Won't get me out there." I said, "Dad, I can find something." So I Google him. And here is a story from like 1948 or something like that. Let's see, 33, 15. Yeah, about 48, 49, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's talking about UFOs being sighted over downtown Birmingham. And they're interviewing this kid. And he said that he had his buddy with him. And you can ask him, too. And his buddy was Dan Schmerl, my dad. And he said, "Oh, yeah, we saw it. We saw him go right on by." And I said, "So there you go. You Googled and there you are talking about UFOs in 1949 over Birmingham." And he goes, "Well, hell, that kid they're quoting, everybody knew he was a liar." And I was like, "But you were with him and you told the same story." "Well, I don't remember any of that."
Oh, my gosh.
But it's there. If you Google him, it's there. It's a story from like 1949 about UFOs over Birmingham.
That's the first thing that pops up, huh?
Yeah. And he doesn't remember it, but he does remember that guy. And he was telling me how he was such a liar. He couldn't believe a word he said.
That's funny. I can't believe you never told me that before. That's a good story.
It is a great story.
Well.
Anyway, back to entrapment.
So
you entrapped me. You led me down the path to grow down a rabbit hole.
Well, as we'll see, you're kind of predisposed to doing that.
This is true.
So the current standard for entrapment comes from the case Jacobson v. U.S. It was a 1992 case. Now, there was some cases in between 92 and 1932 where they talk about entrapment, and there's some different names in there, case names. But Jacobson's pretty much the most recent one. And this case, if you read through it, it's a little sordid, and it's kind of weird about this whole situation about this guy, Jacobson. It involved the U.S. government repeatedly sending offers of pornographic material, which featured basically teenagers and they're under the age of 18, like minors, to this man, Jacobson. They kept asking him over and over again, trying to get him to order these things. And they did it probably, I think, like four or five times. Eventually, he ordered something which was kind of questionable about whether or not it fell into that genre or not. But when he did, they met him at the post office and arrested him. They were slightly more persuasive than just asking him if he liked gladiator movies.
So they were actually sending him stuff to order child pornography?
Yeah. Yeah,
and they were sending it through the U.S. mail, is that what it was?
Yeah, and they were like catalogs and things like that. And they were basically just trying to get him to...
You know, did he ever stop to think, why am I suddenly receiving catalogs to get child porn?
Well, now here's the thing. Back in like 84 or 86 or something like that, there was actually a change in the law which criminalized like child pornography a bit more. So it kind of changed the whole scheme of it.
It made it more the jail term.
Yeah. And so he was on some sort of mailing list from before.
For regular porn?
Yeah.
Or for child porn?
Well, for I think maybe, I don't know, porn that skewed towards the younger looking participants. I don't know. Yeah. So anyway, they got his name from that list and identified him as somebody who potentially might be somebody who they want to look at for this, and then just bombarded him with all this stuff until he finally broke down and ordered it.
He'd ordered that Britney Spears video several times.
The
one where she's dressed up like the schoolgirl early on in her career.
Oh, that sounds toxic.
What was that one? I don't remember it.
Oops,
now.
I did it again.
Is that what it was?
Oops, I did it again.
Was that it? They were dressed in the schoolgirl costumes and dancing in the school?
Maybe.
It was like off her first album or something. But
yeah.
I figure that would, you know, you'd have a lot of child pornographers order that video.
She was of age though, wasn't she, when she did that?
I don't think she was 18 yet, but I mean, it wasn't a porno. It just, you know, steered in that direction, as you said earlier.
Skewed.
Skewed in that direction, yeah.
He enjoyed pornography that skewed younger.
You know, you put girls in the school uniforms and short skirts and stuff like that and put them out there. I mean, that was borderline child pornography. I don't think she was but 16 or 17 at the time. I could be wrong. But
it's a very popular Halloween costume as well.
Well, everything is the sexy devil, the sexy vampire, the sexy garbage collector, whatever. They're all sexy in Halloween. I don't know. It's just an excuse to dress up sexy, I guess. I don't know.
So in that Jacobson case, they basically said that entrapment is a complete defense to a criminal charge on the theory that government agents may not originate a criminal design, implant in an innocent person's mind the disposition to commit a criminal act, and then induce commission of the crime so that the government may prosecute. That was from the Jacobson case. And then a valid entrapment defense has two related elements. Number one, government inducement of the crime. And number two, the defendant's lack of predisposition to engage in the criminal conduct. And that came from Matthews v. United States, which was a 1988 case on entrapment. But it was quoted again in the Jacobson case. So that's why I just jumped straight to the Jacobson case about that. So those are the two important things there. The inducement and the predisposition. The predisposition is really the more important element of those two. The inducement of it, I mean, you can kind of play around with that one. But if the person has a predisposition to commit that crime, then the entrapment defense is pretty much out the window. And that's a problem with a lot of criminals. Whenever you have, like, oh, I was entrapped. Well, they may have persuaded you to do it, but you definitely had the predisposition to do that.
Well, that'd be like if you saw a guy on a street corner, if you're an undercover cop, and you just walked up to him and said, hey, are you holding? Can you, you know, I want to buy whatever. And the guy says, yeah, and sells it to you.
Yeah.
You didn't induce him into committing a crime just because you asked for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not really entrapment. Now, here's one that I always thought, I guess it's not if you put yourself in the place of the criminal, but bait cars.
Yeah.
You take a nice looking car, you put it in a bad part of town, you leave it sitting there unlocked with the keys in it. And you just sit back and wait to see what happens.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I'm walking down the street. I see a car that way. I'm not going to get in and drive off. So I guess that means, you know, only a criminal would do that. But in a way, it's a crime of opportunity that happened to be sitting there. If you're not looking to steal a car. You've never stolen a car. But the money would be nice. Here's one sitting there with the keys in it and the door open, and you hop in it and you go. Now you're suddenly a criminal. I don't know.
Well, it depends. I mean, it depends on the person's background. Generally speaking, somebody is going to do that, they're going to have some sort of criminal history to begin with. I would almost guarantee it. They're not an altar boy coming from St. Joseph, walking down the street and then see that, be like, oh, well, actually altar boys are pretty known for their,
that's right,
mischievous behavior. Drinking the wine.
So, and, I don't know, maybe, sharing maybe the leftover bodies.
Maybe the altar boy is the wrong way to put it. So, but yeah, I mean, whoever does that is probably going to have some sort of criminal record, I think. It'd be like finding a unicorn that would happen.
That was their first offense?
Yeah.
It might be the first time they got caught.
Well, that's true, too.
Now, I've seen some situations because, you know, they had that show on for a while. I haven't come across it in a while, Bait Car.
Yeah.
Have you watched that before?
I've seen it before, yeah.
There's some wild stuff on there, but that, like, an older guy would see it, and he would go get a kid to come and actually get in the car, because I guess he had suspicions that it might be a bait car.
Right.
And so he would get a kid to go do it, and I guess the reasoning was they'll go easier on a kid than if it was them, or the kid didn't have a previous record or whatever, so they'd find a kid that was, like, 16, 17, yeah, something like that.
Or they'd be like, oh, hey, you're a juvenile. It'll all come off your record when you're 18 anyway. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Right. Can one criminal entrap another criminal to do that?
That's a good question. It happens all the time.
He wouldn't have done it, but that guy talked me into it.
It happens all the time, but usually they're working for the police already. So, well, we get more into the elements of entrapment, but before that, I think there might be some pending motions.
Oh, Your Honor, could I approach the bench for the purpose of paying court costs?
So who do we have on the docket today?
We have the Politics Guys.
So the Politics Guys is a podcast that deals with Politics.
Well,
how about that?
That's a title that describes it. And they're right available on Audio Boom, the same as us.
They are. They're on Audio Boom and iTunes. And if you're tired of liberals and conservatives screaming at each other and you're looking for a reasoned civil political debate and analysis,
you won't find it on TV, not on CNN, and not on Fox.
But you will find it on The Politics Guys. They're there to help. Every week, a liberal political scientist and a conservative attorney discuss the latest political news, going beyond the stale, partisan talking points so often parroted by party hacks.
The Politics Guys is available on the News and Politics section and Audio Boom and iTunes.
The show also features regular interviews with guests from the political arena who weigh in with their unique perspective on current issues. Tommy and I each had a chance to listen to The Politics Guys, and we both really enjoyed it. I'm not one who really gets into a lot of political debate often because it is so polarizing, and I feel like a lot of it is just noise, like one side screaming at the other. But when you find somebody who actually talks about politics and they debate it and can reason with the other side and see the other side's points and the reasons why they might do something, it's actually pretty enjoyable.
Even when they agree to disagree, they do it in a civil manner.
They do.
And, you know, that's the way it is. And if you're really going to decide something, that's not always one way or the other. Sometimes it's down the middle. So for a fair and balanced, a real fair and balanced one, I'm not stealing from Fox, but a real fair and balanced debate, listen to The Politics Guys.
Yeah, and they also have a Facebook page, too. I recently went on there, and they have a lot of good debate on their Facebook page as well. So you might want to check that out as well. So it's called The Politics Guys, and you should check it out.
So if you're looking for dad jokes, stay here. If you're looking for politics, check out The Politics Guys.
Tell them Mike and Tom.
We don't want to use that for everybody.
I like to use it for everybody.
Tell them Mike and Tom sent you.
We don't want to use that for everybody.
You snake.
I entrapped you into that one.
Yeah, it was entrapment. I can't believe you did that to me.
So we were talking about the elements of entrapment as stated in the Jacobson through the Matthews case, and it was government inducement of the crime and the defendant's lack of predisposition to engage in the criminal conduct. So, as I said, even if there is inducement, if there's been a finding that predisposition, like basically they're inclined to do it, it's basically fatal to an entrapment defense. The whole basis was whether or not they're an unwary innocent or instead an unwary criminal who readily availed himself of the opportunity to perpetrate the crime. And that's from that Matthews case as well, discussing it. So you can't really mix up the difference between intent, like mens rea, as we talked about, the mental capacity where you have the mental desire to commit the crime. Because you could have the mens rea, where you are trying to commit the crime, but you could still be entrapped. Because the intent and the predisposition are two different things. So basically, through the inducement, they have given you the intent almost. They've made you have that mental state where you're going to do it. So predisposition is basically whether or not you had any kind of prior criminal involvement in things like that, if that makes sense. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
You can't call me Your Honor.
Yes, I mean, Counselor.
I know you do during not legal briefs. The other thing we do.
Approaching the court to pay court bench to pay court costs.
Yeah, that thing.
We'll figure it out.
But, you know, you can't
okay,
call.
Okay, Counselor.
There we go.
Okay, yeah, ambulance chaser.
Whoa, easy there. So even there's also it talks about in the Jacobson case, basically, even if the person doesn't have any kind of prior criminal history or prior criminal involvement, the ready commission of a criminal act where basically the defendant promptly accepts the undercover agent's opportunity or offer to do it, to basically sell drugs or whatever, can actually establish predisposition as well. So it's like, if I come to you and I say, hey, Tommy, go buy me some drugs. And you're like, no. Hey, Tommy, go buy me some drugs. You're like, no. Hey, Tommy, go buy me some drugs. And you're like, okay. And you don't have any criminal act.
Anything to shut you up.
Yeah. Then that might be entrapment. But if I'm like, hey, Tommy, go buy me some. You're like, sure.
I don't need to buy you some. I got them right here.
Yeah.
How many drugs do you want?
So that would be actually probably established predisposition if you act immediately upon that.
That's
so.
My stash. You can't have it.
There's got to be some of that, like, oh, no, I don't want to. Oh, no, I don't want to. That whole type thing.
Well, and sometimes they even get carried away to the point where they may be working with the cops, they think, to a certain extent. And they say, well, we want you to go do this or that. And then they turn around and charge them, or they tell them they're going to charge them for it. If they don't do something, maybe they feel like they're going to get themselves killed or something like that.
Yeah.
So, and they put them in a situation where they have to go do something, or they have to refuse to do something, but they're basically entrapped by the police to do it. And it's funny, most of the stuff, you always think about drugs. It always comes back to drugs when most of the stuff comes up.
Yeah.
But the other one, though, there are some things along the same way with that Chris Hansen.
Yeah.
On the child pornography. Most police departments in this day and age now have like a cyber crimes unit.
Oh, absolutely.
And they go out looking for predators. And they have cops that basically will go on the internet and pose as a 15-year-old girl or whatever and try to find people looking for 15-year-old girls, just like they do on To Catch a Predator and bring them in. I was just coming to help her with her homework. Well, why do you have a six-pack and a box of condoms?
Six-pack of wine coolers.
Yeah.
I was actually, have you ever seen that show Reno 911?
Yes.
I was watching that not too long ago. It's canceled now, but I was watching some reruns of it. And Travis Jr., the one that always wears the sunglasses, and
right.
he's standing there and he's like at a computer and he's like, hey, it's basically what we do to entrap people. And he's like going through and he's using all the acronyms. Like he's like TTFN, that stands for Tata for now. Like, and he's like doing all the internet speak. And then he's basically entrapping, or not entrapping somebody, but soliciting somebody. He's like, what is your real name? And the guy says his name. And he's like, Ray. And he looks up over the divider and it's the cop on the other side.
They got each other.
Yeah. They both draw down their guns on each other. So it's kind of funny.
Well, but what I was getting at is this is kind of along those lines, not to that silly extent, but what would happen is, I don't know whether it was to up their numbers or if they felt that they were just doing their jobs better this way. But what they would do is they would go into the chat rooms or whatever it was where they would find people, and they were adult ones.
Mm-hmm.
And they would look for people, and at first they would be an adult. And once they got them interested, maybe this would be over the course of several days or several communications, got them interested, then they would change their story and say, oh, by the way, I'm really only 15. I'm not 21 like I told you before.
Yeah.
But by that time, they've already established how, oh, man, you like Prince? Oh, I like Prince, too.
Yeah, they've already got a rapport going.
Yeah, they got the rapport going. So then they change the story and then say, do you still want to meet me? Well, when the guy says yes, boom, they lower the boom on him.
Yeah.
And they they've come back now and said that's entrapment.
Right.
And then on the same token, you have men, maybe they would answer men's sites. Men were looking, you know, placing personal ads on adult sites.
Yeah.
They would answer these men on adult sites, same type thing. Start the conversation with them, get them hooked in, and then say, oh, by the way, I'm 15.
Now, let me ask you this. What happens if they pull that on somebody, they arrest them, then they get a search warrant for the person's computer, then they go through the computer and they find all kinds of pictures of underage children on that computer?
Well,
then do you think it's entrapment?
Well, here's what I'd say. Probably what they did was entrapment, but that doesn't keep them from charging them with the child pornography having it.
Well, could be the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine there.
Well, that's true. That if that's how you got in there.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, that'd be an interesting situation. I mean, I think at that point, even though you maybe you induce them to it, if you find that on their computer, then at that point they have a predisposition for it. So the whole entrapment thing might just go out the window.
Yeah. And you know, I can see, I mean, there's no excuse for that people, you know, grown men, 40 and 50 year old men soliciting 15-year-old girls. You're never going to defend that. But,
well, there's, I might have to defend that at some point. I haven't had a case yet where I've had to defend that, but I might have to.
But I mean, there's a lot of, you know, I don't know, lonely individuals. And if you tell them the right things up front and they think they are meeting someone that's of age and they're talking to them and then suddenly you change it, do they say, I mean, I guess you'd say if they're a decent person, oh, see you later, bloop, and they click it off.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's a lot of desperate people out there. And it may be that induced them to do something they wouldn't ordinarily do or they weren't looking for. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, but then their hard drive's busting with all kinds of other child pornography.
Well, yeah, if it is. But I'm saying, what if it's not, though? Then I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's the same way.
Nine times out of ten, you know what? It is.
that kid walking down the street and sees the car door open and the keys in the car, you know, and he's never committed a crime, but he jumps in that car.
The old unicorn.
I don't know.
Keep looking. Keep looking. So let me give you a couple of hypotheticals I came across.
All right.
So a pretty lady promises to have sex with the defendant if he will bring her drugs to enhance her sexual pleasure. And basically, the lady is a confidential informant, and she is preying on the defendant's sexual urges and not his predisposition to sell drugs. So basically, at that point, if he goes and gets her drugs, is that entrapment?
Well, I mean, if they're saying this guy, if the guy had a history of selling drugs, then I would say no. If he had no history of selling drugs and they just wanted to catch him for some reason and they did that, and the guy had to go out and buy drugs to be able to bring them to her, then I'd say, no, that's not really right. But if he already had a big stash and he just came over and rolled some out.
A lot of these entrapment cases basically kind of turn on the fact about whether or not the confidential informant promised some benefit for committing a crime, and that additional benefit motivated the defendant to commit the crime that they weren't otherwise going to do. So there, in that example I gave you, basically their sexual desire to want to have sex with this woman made them, I guess, lustful and crazy enough to go get some drugs.
It was a crime of passion.
Yeah. Heat of the moment.
Well, see, that's the thing. You'd think on both these things that it's just black and white. Look, either they're guilty or they're not. But when you really dig into them, it's really tough, because who says what's really in their head or their heart when they do something? And that's what you've got to get to. What was really in their head when they did what they did?
Well, let me give you another hypothetical.
All right.
A police department puts out on Facebook, and they put out a post that says, "Breaking news. Area meth and heroin supply possibly contaminated with Ebola." And then it says, "Meth and heroin recently brought into the central Texas, as well as the ingredients used to make, could be contaminated with life-threatening disease, Ebola. If you have recently purchased meth or heroin in the central Texas area, please take it to the local police or sheriff so it can be screened with a special device. Do not use it until it has been properly checked for possible Ebola contamination. Please share in hopes anyone who has contaminated meth or heroin that needs tested."
I'd say that absolutely is not entrapment.
And so then,
that goes to Darwinism.
And so then a woman brings drugs in basically to be screened for Ebola and gets arrested.
Yes, I agree.
You agree that's entrapment?
No, I agree it's not entrapment, and she deserved to be arrested. Not only is she a drug user or a drug dealer, but she's stupid as hell.
That allegedly really happened.
I think I remember hearing about it. I didn't know that anybody actually took him up on it, but I do remember a police department offering to test the drugs for possibly being poisoned.
Yes, and that actually happened. They put on their Facebook, and I didn't actually check it out, like fact check it totally, so this could be one of those internet urban legends, but I mean, it's interesting nonetheless, but supposedly they put on their Facebook page, "This morning we had our first concerned citizen notify the police department that they believe their methamphetamine may be tainted. Our officers gladly took the item for further testing."
Well, that's true. It might tip off anybody else thinking about bringing theirs in for checking.
Yeah, well, you know, you catch one, that's probably good enough.
Well, and you know, they have those things, of course, now this isn't entrapment, but they have those things where they're trying to do fugitive roundups, fugitive warrants. And they send out notices that they've won a flat screen TV or something like that. You just have to go to the certain location to pick it up. And the location, a lot of times it'll be the police department. They walk in anyway.
Now, let me ask you a question. Why the second hypothetical I gave you, why do you think it would not be entrapment?
Because they did not induce this person to do anything they wouldn't have already done. They already had the drugs. The only thing they did was just get them to bring it to them instead of them having to go find it on them.
Well, I mean, they did induce her to bring it there.
Yeah, but she already had it. She'd already committed the crime.
Right. So she met the first element of entrapment. They induced her to do it.
Right.
But then the second element, the predisposition, she basically was already predisposed to have it. So it's not like she went and rounded up it to bring it in.
Right.
She already had it.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing you got to make sure whenever you're looking at these things, you have the two elements. You want to not mix the two elements. You want to have element one and element two.
So it wasn't entrapment.
No, it was not entrapment. Well, it wouldn't be.
I'm 100%.
Yeah, you're doing well.
The first one I said it was, and I was right.
And just in case, I know that basically there have been several posts on our Facebook page asking us to do this. So I believe Maxwell Edison may have entrapped us into doing an episode on entrapment.
I think he had trapped us into it. He challenged us to do it.
Yeah. So, but you know what? We have a predisposition to do podcasts, so it's definitely not entrapment.
Well, I guess that's true. What was that Beatles song, Maxwell's Tiny Silver Hammer or something like that?
Don't know.
Think that's what he was named after? Or Maxwell Smart?
Probably Maxwell Smart.
Maxwell Smart.
I don't know.
We'll never know. Who is Maxwell named after? All right. I've got a couple that I found while gearing up for this that I wanted to go over. Just they go in along with your ones. And this also takes place in other countries besides the U.S.
Oh.
Here was one.
I don't know about these foreign jurisprudence entrapments.
Oh, well, I have that for you. They have it's a little bit different in some other countries. In Canada, for instance, it says entrapment is not a defense.
Really?
No. What it is, I don't know whether you call it special circumstance or something. What happens is they have the trial and you don't bring up entrapment. But if you're found guilty, then you can, I guess, appeal it or whatever under it being entrapment, but they decide your guilt or innocence first, and you can't claim entrapment unless you're found guilty.
That seems kind of silly with regards to judicial economy.
Well, that's just what it says. It says the question of entrapment is considered only after there has been a finding of guilt. If, after finding the accused guilty, the court determines that the accused was entrapped, the court enters a judicial stay proceedings that is similar to an acquittal. Now, in Germany, it says they do allow entrapment defense, but it usually just causes the offense to be reduced, not overturned.
You know, that kind of actually makes a bit more sense, because you still did the crime.
Yeah. United Kingdom, they have it. It says whether the police did more to present the defendant with an unexceptional opportunity to commit a crime, and it's got a list of things that they look at as to whether it would be or not. But they basically said historically entrapment was common in the 18th and 19th century and was used frequently by the Bank of England and Royal Mint to catch people involved in currency crime. So, in other words, it's like, it's not that strong of a defense. They kind of like, well, if you're stupid enough to fall for our trickery, then you deserve to go to the pokey. I don't think they call it the pokey there, though.
No, I think that's an American colloquialism.
Scotland is pretty much, it says, the remedies available correspond with those in England and are considered to be either a plea in a bar of trial or a challenge to the admissibility of evidence. So anyway, the one that I was going to talk about happened in England, and there was a crosswalk, and evidently the crosswalk was marked that stop for pedestrians. So if you approach crosswalk and there's pedestrians, you got to stop and let them walk. If there's nobody there, you can just keep going.
Okay.
All right. Well, this guy, because there was a high number of tickets being given out at this particular crosswalk, he went down and started filming. What he noted was there was a guy that spent the whole day walking back and forth across this crosswalk with a policeman hidden right around the corner from it. So this policeman was really racking up the offenses that day while he was sitting there filming him. And when the policeman realized this guy was filming him, he ran him off. Well, what he's surmising is this guy was either an undercover cop that was walking back and forth across crosswalk, or he was somebody, a civilian that they induced into doing this, whether he was working off jail time or being paid or whatever, a paid informant or whatever.
He was getting his steps in.
Yeah. So he was sitting there going back and forth, and he would kind of go across, saw a car coming. He'd start across, and it was debate, you know, to see whether the people would stop or not. Now, whether he was waiting till the last second or whatever, who knows, but he was spending the day going back and forth. So after this video was shown to the judge, a bunch of these cases got thrown out. And see, they were fining the people that did that $200 each time.
Yow.
So this community was raking in the bucks by the cops handling that in that manner.
That's quite a racket.
Yeah, that's kind of like our illegal seizures. Well, not illegal. They're legal illegal seizures.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. But they were racking up the bucks, bringing them in.
Imagine if, like, the pedestrian got hit. He gets knocked down. He goes, I'll be fine. It's just a flesh wound.
I'll take you on. The knights that say knee.
One thing about entrapment, it's what I call a sticky situation.
Is that like a spider web joke?
South Park.
Oh, South Park?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't watch that much South Park.
Oh, love South Park.
I watched a few of them, but I don't know. Kenny was always dying.
I don't know. They stopped doing that after 4 or 5 seasons.
Did they?
Yeah.
Only one I remember is when Santa Claus saved Jesus or something like that.
Does that have the Christmas poo in it?
Yeah.
Mr. Hanky?
Yeah.
Radio.
That's 2 episodes in a row we've mentioned Mr. Hanky.
Is it?
Yeah.
Now we're on a run.
I guess so. Hey, did you see the sheep got the reaction that it did? The sheep joke?
I did.
I got the Saddam Hussein cartoon put in there. I never saw that before.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Let's put it on the Facebook page.
I'll have to check it out.
It was basically the same thing. Snow White was the person talking to the animals. And Saddam put his hand over the sheep's mouth and just said, "She lies, she lies."
I'll have to go look at that. I'm not picturing it.
What also surprised me was the people that wrote in from other countries saying, in Australia, we say it's people in New Zealand that do that. Somebody else, they named something else, and somebody else said some other country I've never heard of, like the Aberdeens or something. I don't even know what that is.
I think Aberdeen is an area.
Oh, is that what it is? Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, I thought it was another country. I didn't know what that country was. I figured my geography was failing me.
Those Aberdeenians.
Those Aberdeenians. Those sheep buggers.
Well, there's sheep buggery jokes everywhere, I guess.
I guess so. Everybody has a group to make fun of.
It brings us all together.
We all need someone to look down upon.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we talk about different legal terms that were discussed. And usually I quiz Tommy and ask him if he can remember what they mean.
And I ask Michael why he's wearing knee-high lace-up boots.
What? I'm wearing a sweaty t-shirt and flip-flops. Which is, the sweat's nice and dried right now. I'm really itching for a shower.
Yeah, I know you're really from New Zealand.
I'm a Kiwi. I have been there. New Zealand's awesome.
I've never been there.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's like one of those places, everywhere you look, you're like, oh, look over there. That could be a postcard. Oh, look over there. That could be a postcard. Ah, postcard. Just, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Hmm.
So the first term is defense.
Defense?
Yeah.
Defense.
What is a defense?
It's right out in the front yard. He said, hey, that's the fence. Don't lean on it. See, that's my fence. Get off the fence. Defense is when you go into court and you put up your defense about why you're not guilty.
And what is one of the defenses we just talked about?
Entrapment.
That's right. Entrapment is a defense you can assert whenever there's criminal charges against you. And it's actually a complete defense to the entire criminal charge in the United States.
Yeah, yeah. It's when the cop has set you up. See?
Now, in Jacobson v. U.S., there were 2 key elements for the entrapment defense. And what were those?
Predisposition.
That's the second one.
All right. And predisposed. I guess that's the same thing as predisposition, huh?
It's the same word. just with a different suffix on it.
Well, I'm a suffragette. you have to want to do it, and you have to have the ability to do it.
What do they call it when a woman needs to go into labor but she won't, so they have to
induce?
Yes,
you have to not be induced.
No,
you have to want to do it.
So the government has to induce the person into committing the crime, and the defendant cannot have a predisposition to engage in the criminal conduct.
Hey, you know what? One thing I read that I thought was weird that it said.
What's that?
There has to be a history of that type of crime prevalent in the area. It had a statement, something like that, about when you're trying to say it was an entrapment. If there's a history of this type of crime that you're trying to induce or whatever it was.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I've never actually used an entrapment defense in court, because pretty much every single client I've ever had always fails the second part of that test, the predisposition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I haven't come across the unicorn yet.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I'll tell you the other one that I'd wanted to bring up. I just recalled what it was. There was an article in Rolling Stone where it was popular in California. Of course, I guess this is where 21 Jump Street came from.
Yeah.
That they would put the young cops in the schools posing as teenagers and try to buy drugs in the schools. And they would talk about the big successes that they had and everything. Well, in one of these cases, they got out, basically it was about entrapment. There was a kid that was 17 years old. He suffered with Asperger's all his life, very antisocial and everything. Mm-hmm. Well, this undercover cop goes in. He starts trying to be friends with him. Well, this kid, he was already challenged. He was under a remedial learning program at school and everything else. And this cop was like, I'll be your friend, but I really need some weed bad. You got to give me some weed. So, and he put pressure on this kid for like 3 or 4 weeks. If you want me to be your friend, I'll be your friend. This kid had no friends. He had, no social life. He, basically he didn't even interact with people, but he was very excited that this other kid supposedly wanted to be his friend. And he kept telling him, I really got to have some dope. I really got to have some dope. So he finally one day he sticks $20 in the kid's hands. He said, bring me some dope or we're not going to be friends. So the kid remembered that where he went shopping with his parents was it had some of the stores where they sell pot legally in California. So he walked up to a guy that he saw out there and asked him if he could buy $20 worth of pot from that he had just bought from the store. So the guy sold him like $5 worth of pot for $20. It was like 0.6 of a gram in a baggie. So then the kid takes it back and gives it to the undercover cop. And then they have the big drug bust and sweep him off to jail. And
Justice is served.
And he was in jail for 2 days before his parents could even see him. And he had regressed way back to where he was, not even communicative or anything else. And they finally, the court did have the sense to say, this was not right what you did. And there was educators that knew the kind of situation this kid was in and did nothing to step in and try to help him.
Man, I would sue the pants off of.
They reached everyone. A settlement with the city. They didn't say what. It was one of those signed and sealed, but they reached a settlement with it, and the kid had to go through several more years of counseling after that.
A lot of these government agencies, too, have sovereign immunity where any kind of lawsuit against them is capped, too.
Yeah.
So
I don't think it was millions of dollars, but it might have been a couple hundred thousand or something like that.
Those things are even capped sometimes like $100,000 or $50,000.
Yeah, so that could have been. But I just felt terrible picturing this kid and what he had gone through. And in a way, he didn't even buy it. The guy stuck $20 in his hand.
Yeah.
And so all he did was, get this, try to figure out a way so that this guy would be his friend. He had no other friends. And so I really think that this program going in the schools, I know that what the intention is, and it may be good, but kids at that age are struggling enough. They have enough stuff going on and peer pressure and everything else.
Yeah, and you stick an adult in there to manipulate them.
Exactly. An adult manipulating people, and especially someone that's mentally challenged, that was just not right.
What is another kind of famous entrapment case was the Ruby Ridge case.
Oh, yeah.
So that ended up being an entrapment as well. So,
That ended poorly.
It did end poorly. Probably do a whole episode on Ruby Ridge, but
yeah, and that was the impetus for the Waco.
Yeah,
then wasn't it?
Yep, sure was. Well, that's going to do it for the episode. Entrapment is definitely a very interesting area of the law, and there's not a ton of case law on it because it doesn't happen a ton. And one of the reasons is because it's kind of hard to get somebody to fit those criteria because a lot of these cases when you have drug deals and things like that, you're dealing with people that have a history of selling drugs and being involved in the drug culture. So entrapment is not really a great offense or not really a great a defense for these different crimes. So,
yeah. And I think that women offering you sex, if you run out and grab them drugs, that's really entrapment.
Yeah.
Just like that case you gave us, that's really bad.
It is really bad.
I don't think they should be allowed to do those kind of things.
Okay. That's good. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.